sign up list.
Okay.
We'll open the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, February 18th. The sun has returned, which is wonderful. It's been a long time. Almost didn't recognize it. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3700A. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 3700A permits credit unions to receive deposits of public funds on a basis similar to that of banks.
Thank you. And Pam Levitt, Hal Scoggins, and Ron Barrick, please.
Good morning, Senator and members of the committee. I'm Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. We were expecting Governor Schwarzenegger to come in and testify in support of this bill, but I haven't seen him yet.
He's making his way.
We will keep our eyes posted for him, just in case he wants to drop in and see all of you this morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to hear this bill. It is not a new bill to this committee, House Bill 3700, which allows public entities to deposit into credit unions in Oregon, has been before the Senate Business Committee both in 2009 and in the 2007 legislative sessions. Public deposits or public funds deposited in financial institutions by a treasurer or of any state or local government entity. Examples of public deposits include public utility districts, fire districts, water districts, school districts, irrigation districts in cities and counties. In 2003, we were able to pass a bill in the legislature that allowed credit unions to accept public funds up to the federal deposit insurance amount limit. And at that time, it was $100,000. The federal government has raised that to $250,000 temporarily. It will go back down in 2013. So that is the current law. Credit unions in Oregon can receive up to $250,000 in public funds. Since 2003, we've just heard from a lot of our local communities. Credit unions continue to call our office and say, you know, the local entities come to the credit union and want to establish a relationship. We're in their communities. Our board of directors are volunteers. They're in the communities. They want to have a choice, an option in depositing in a local financial institution. And so the current legislation and how we'll go over that in more detail, really basically eliminates the cap and puts in a lot of safety and soundness protections as required by the Treasurer's Office and also our regulator. There are several reasons we believe this bill is important to Oregon communities. We believe increased competition for public funds and deposits would produce a better rate of return for the public's dollar. Federally insured local credit unions would provide an additional option in the marketplace for these deposited funds. Secondly, we believe it's beneficial to local communities because credit unions' deposits would reside in locally owned cooperatives that are headquartered in the communities and make loans in communities in which they operate. And lastly, there are over 4,000 public agencies in Oregon that receive public funds and require a relationship with a financial institution. And we think it's important that they have an option of choosing a credit union. And that $250,000 limit has been really an impediment for some of these entities from choosing a credit union. One argument that you will hear about is the taxation issue, and I want to spell that out very directly to all of you. It's in our written testimony. One of the arguments we continue to hear is you are tax exempt, therefore you should not receive taxpayer dollars. Well, I'm very proud to talk about the credit union model passed by the federal government in 1934. Credit unions are not-for-profit financial cooperatives. We are democratically owned and controlled by our members. It's a different model than a for-profit financial institution. It's a cooperative model. Volunteer boards of directors make decisions on how best to use the money. What is the motivation for credit unions is how do we provide the best service to our members. I laid out some additional argument, and I'm not going to read that, but I just want to say that, just to highlight yet again, that we pay the same share of federal, state, and local taxes as any business, including real and personal property taxes. The tax exemption only applies to the corporate income tax because of the not-for-profit structure. And Congress in 1998 reaffirmed that credit unions are an important component of the financial services industry, and the structure of the credit unions is as true today as it was in 1934, and we're still providing that value to our members. Finally, I just want to address the concept of the need in communities, and I pulled an example from Tillamook County where one of our members said in a letter to his representative, as you know, things are happening in Tillamook County, lots of changes with our new credit union. The college has asked us if they can move their accounts to us. Port of Tillamook has made inquiries. The local PUD, the city of Tillamook, county offices. In fact, just about every public entity have come to ask, asking if we could help them out. The reasons for this are varied, but the point is they all feel the credit union should at least be an option for them. And I think that's kind of what we're hearing. That's why we're here, is we want to make credit unions just an option in these local communities. And Hal's going to talk about, go over the specifics in the bill.
Okay. And thank you, Ms. Levin. And just a reminder, as we move to Mr. Scoggins, we do have all the written testimony. Okay. So keep that in mind as we go forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Hal Scoggins. I'm an attorney with Farley, Wada, and Witt. We are the outside counsel for the Credit Union Association of Oregon and many credit unions throughout Oregon, Washington, and the West Coast. I will briefly run through what the bill is all about and what it does, and then be happy to answer any questions, keeping in mind that you have my written testimony. Essentially, what this bill does is it starts off with a similar approach to SB 600 from last year, and that's simply to say we are going to put into place a collateral system for public funds deposits in credit unions that is equivalent to the collateral system that's in place for banks. As Pam mentioned, SB 600 would have done that last year. We had legislation in prior sessions that would have done the same thing. Last year, the public funds system went through a fairly large overhaul in terms of how the collateral pool and the what we call the cross collateralization would work, and in recognition of that fact, everybody agreed that was not the time to inject credit union public funds into the system. And so now we're back this year with a bill that takes the same approach, although to a different mechanism as revised by last year's legislation. And so what this does is it sets up a collateral pool for credit unions, just like the collateral pool for banks. Credit unions would have to put up collateral to secure their public funds in an amount that's set by the state treasurer's office based on reports that the treasurer receives from credit unions themselves and from the regulator. And in addition to securing a credit union's own deposits, just like the bank pool, a credit union's collateral would secure the public funds deposits that are in other credit unions. This is the cross-collateral mechanism. But there is a maximum liability for one credit union to secure another credit union's public funds deposits in the event of a failure, and that is set at 10% of the credit union's public funds deposits. Now, in addition to creating an equal collateral pool for credit unions, what this does is it implements some mechanisms that we've worked out with the state treasurer's office to deal with some issues unique to sort of the startup aspect of the process. And for one thing, it says that the treasurer does not have to recognize any credit unions as able to receive public funds deposits until there are 5 credit unions that are ready to jump into the pool and have received letters from public funds managers that request those credit unions to accept public funds in excess of the federally insured amount. So there have to be at least 5 participants ready and able to jump into the program. The second thing is that there have to be sufficient funds paid to the treasurer treasurer by the credit unions or from some other outside source in order to fund the program for the first year of its operation before the treasurer has to start up. If there aren't funds there, then the treasurer doesn't have to start up the program at all. And again, that's in recognition of the fact that this is paid for by the participants, just like on the bank side. It's not paid for with tax dollars. It's paid for by the institutions that participate. So to start up, credit unions have to get enough funds together, either from participants or from participants and others, in order to get the program going. And then the third thing that can happen is the treasurer can, if there's less than 10 credit union participants in the program, the treasurer can increase the maximum liability of each of those credit unions' collateral for another credit union's failure from 10% to 20% of the amount of the deposits that are held by the surviving credit union, so to speak. And that's, again, simply a mechanism to better protect public dollars while the program may still be small in operation and there's fewer than 10 credit unions participating. Once there's more than 10 credit unions participating, then the liability would automatically be decreased back to 10%, just like it is currently the place for banks. And then finally, the treasurer has the ability to actually suspend the program if at any time there are less than 5 credit unions that are participating in the pool for a period of 6 months or more. And again, this is something that we worked out with the treasurer in recognition of the fact that if there's not that many credit unions participating, it simply may not be worth their while to operate the program. So if we go for 6 months without more at least 5 credit unions participating, then the treasurer can actually suspend the program. And credit unions that are still participating would have to back out and only accept up to the federally insured amount of deposits. This legislation does not require any public entity to place public funds with any credit union. It simply would give them the option of doing so and provides mechanisms to protect the public funds that are placed with credit unions so that in the event of a credit union failure, that those public funds are protected to the fullest extent that we can do so. That's it, very simply. That's what this bill does, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
We may have some. We'll go to Mr. Barrick. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ron Barrick, and I'm President and CEO of Advantis Credit Union. Advantis is headquartered in Milwaukee, Oregon, and we currently serve over 41,000 members, primarily in the Portland metropolitan area. And obviously, I'm here today to support your request for House Bill 3700. The bill is very simple and straightforward. It would allow public entities to deposit their funds in Oregon credit unions over the current $250,000 insured limit. And as noted, the legislature passed a bill in 2003 that allowed public entities to make deposits in credit unions but capped the amount at $100,000. And what we found is that even at today's limit of $250,000, that is too restrictive for most public entities to bother with making deposits at credit unions. We really think this comes down to a free market issue. As I'm sure you're aware, credit unions are locally owned by their members, controlled by their volunteer board of directors, and chosen by the membership. And we think that local public entities should have the option of using the services of their locally owned credit unions. Credit unions throughout Oregon regularly provide services and receive requests from public officials in their communities. And among the groups that approach us are rural fire districts, city fire and police departments, school districts, and so on. And we get a number of requests and reasons why they'd like to include us. And I'm not going to take the time to read through it. It's in my testimony. You can see what I've included here. I do want to take some time and talk about why we think passage of this legislation is good public policy. We believe that because it fulfills the requests of numerous public entities for more options with whom to do business. The additional options create more competition for public deposits. The additional competition is naturally going to lead to better rates of return on the deposits, regardless of whether the public entity elects to actually expand or change their account relationship. In other words, and this is a key point, just the presence of credit unions as an option is going to increase the returns public entities realize on their deposits, regardless of whether or not they actually choose to do business with a credit union. And it also reduces exposure to the state treasurer's office by spreading the risk of public funds deposits over a greater number of financial institutions. And you're likely to hear a number of reasons to oppose this bill, and I'd like to address some of what those issues are likely to be. One is the general assertion that this change is going to have a devastating effect on the banking industry in Oregon. The same options already allowed in 22 other states, and data over a five-year period from June 2004 to June of 2009 shows no discernible impact on the relative growth of banks and credit unions in those states versus ones in which public funds deposits are not allowed. There's simply no credible evidence to support this notion. You might also hear that this is a zero-sum game that will not increase total liquidity in lending in Oregon. And our research indicates that the bulk of Oregon's public funds deposits are currently held at institutions headquartered in states like California, Minnesota, and North Carolina. This is a wonderful opportunity to bring some of those dollars home and put them back to work in our local communities. Also, passage of this legislation might result in liquidity issues for banks due to a rapid outflow of deposits, causing them to sell securities at a loss. Again, there's no credible reason to believe this is going to happen, and even if some banks were to experience any outflow of deposits, they're quite capable of managing their liquidity, as that's what all financial institutions do on a day-to-day basis. And every bank headquartered in Oregon has ample access to other sources of liquidity, and in fact, 97% of them belong to the Federal Home Loan Bank of Seattle. Also, you might hear that the complex of the design of the program would preclude credit union participation, and credit unions acknowledge that banks and the state treasurer's office did a very good job of creating this program. It works, the state treasurer is comfortable with it, it's a proven model, and hence there's no reason to reinvent the wheel here. Also, you might hear that the only way passage of this legislation would be palatable to the banking industry would be by leveling the playing field and taxing credit unions. I just want to note that credit unions, and that includes all of them, regardless of their size, are not-for-profit financial cooperatives. Our services and sophistication have changed over the years in response to consumer and business expectations and demands. However, the reason we're exempt from corporate income taxes are as valid today as they were in the 1930s when they were originally put in place and then reaffirmed by Congress in 1998. And if, in fact, credit unions really do have an unfair competitive advantage, it stands to reason that banks would be rushing to convert to a credit union charter. Yet, that's certainly not happening today, and there's no record of it ever happening in the history of the banking industry in Oregon. Some things that everyone does agree on are that credit unions pay higher rates than banks. Banks will have to compete more aggressively to retain these funds, and that public entities will be the ultimate beneficiaries by earning better returns on their deposits. And that's really the crux of why this is good public policy and should be adopted by the Oregon State Legislature. So in summary, public entities would like to have this option, but the existing $250,000 cap makes it impractical for most, if not all, for them to be able to work with credit unions. It makes sense for credit unions to be allowed to meet the service requests of the public entities within their field of membership, and it's good public policy to do so. And so for these reasons, we respectfully request that you support and adopt this common sense proposal to remove the existing cap. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baird. Question for me, Senator Schrader.
Yeah, you mentioned that this has been done in 22 other states. So is this framework similar? I've heard that this is a policy in Washington State, for example, but there are some tweaks that are different in Washington compared to Oregon. Do you know, and can you tell me what those are?
I can. Mr. Chair, Senator Schrader, the reference to other states accepting or allowing public deposits to go into credit unions is that's as far as it goes. They allow public funds to go into credit unions. Each state has its own public funds model, public funds protection model, if you will. And the Washington model is a little bit different than the Oregon model. The Oregon, in fact, the changes that were brought about last session, as I'm sure the OBA will tell you, the changes that were brought about in Oregon last session were due to observing some of the drawbacks that were present in the Washington system that were exposed with the collapse of the Bank of Clark County. And so each state has its own model, and the Oregon model is probably unique in terms of how it works as opposed to other states. But the question of putting public funds in credit unions and the safety of being able to put public funds in credit unions really isn't necessarily dependent on the model. The question is, how safe is that model? And the safety of that model is the same for banks and credit unions. There's no reason that this model can't work for credit unions.
Okay, thank you.
Senator George.
I'll kind of run on that same issue. When other states, which talk about the tax advantage of credit unions, generally, just because I understand, do other states, when they allow their funds to be invested with credit unions, then provide a taxing structure, or do they leave the taxing structure the same? How does that work when it comes to how we do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's a good question, and the short answer is that other states have not done anything special with taxation with respect to public funds deposits in credit unions. And the reason goes back to what Pam articulated in terms of the structure of the credit union and the issue of the tax exemption in the first place, which is that credit unions don't pay income tax because credit unions are operated for the benefit of their members on a cooperative basis, whereas banks are operated for the benefit of the shareholders that own the banks. And the dividends that go back to the shareholders are different from the shared cooperative nature that the credit unions operate in. And so like all nonprofit organizations, they don't pay income tax. And that's why those states haven't tied the taxation to the public funds deposits.
And Chair Metzger, Senator George, I just wanted to add that I was with a credit union CEO yesterday who's in a rural community, said, I paid $1 million in property taxes. So the argument of we pay no taxes, I mean, I wish I had time to pull up all the amount of money that credit unions are paying. Property, a lot of the property taxes are what goes into these public deposits, the fire district, the water districts. A lot of that is from property tax dollars, which we do pay. So there's a lot of taxes that credit unions are paying, and because any profits on the income side goes back to the membership in form of better rates, lower fees, membership-driven programs, that's the structure and that's the model.
Pam, this is, I guess, more towards the politics in this building.
Sure.
As you know, I'm a huge free market person, and I'm very supportive of the credit unions competing with the banks. I think it's great. I think the more choices consumers have been phenomenal. And since becoming a legislator and learning more about this, I've actually joined a credit union. Mm-hmm. So give you an idea where I'm coming from. However, when it comes to this particular piece of legislation, I think generally I agree with it, generally. But it's kind of come out of, for me, it's come out of nowhere. And the politics of the building appear that there's not been adequate public process on this. And it's really affecting how I view this piece of legislation. So before I really commit on this thing, my view is that I think this is legislation that I could support at some point. But the fact that in a 10-day turnaround, we're now sitting here with this piece of legislation that is so controversial. Give me your view on the public process to date.
Senator, Chair Metzger and Senator George, thank you for that question. I mean, that's certainly in this building and it needs to be addressed. And, for me, who has worked on this issue for over 10 years, in fact, Senator Farioli pulled me aside this morning and said, I have a letter from a credit union CEO who was working on this issue in the 60s. So it has been a long-standing issue from the credit union community of, this is good public policy. Passed the bill in 03, had a bill in the 07 session and the 09 session. We personally pulled the bill, out of of 2009 because of the changes that were going on in discussions with the Treasurer's Office. So that's the foundation. There are a lot of bills that are being heard in this session that are controversial. We got to a point where we had language, finally, that the Treasurer's Office had said, we can live with this. Our regulator said, we can live with this. And it happened, it just happened, that the final agreements were on February 1st. And so the opportunity to come and finally move this legislation, again, you know, I understand the comment of coming out of left field, but it is an issue that's been around for many, many years. The opportunity to finally move the legislation was there. And I think that it's good public policy, and that's the decision that lawmakers should make, is on the public policy and not on the politics that are going on in the building, and why this bill was added to the list of others on those letters that are floating around, I don't know. But I can tell you I'm staying focused, and my members are staying focused on the fact that we think this is good for Oregon communities.
I would just add to that, Senator George, and what Ms. Leavitt said is, unlike some issues, this is one that, and this committee has heard this many, many times. In fact, we did pull the bill last 2009, not because of the policy. We did hear all the policy, but because we were concerned of the model that the Treasurer had to put together. And I will give kudos to our good friend, Treasurer Westland, who worked very, very hard on this and to get this ready. And so I'd say the one major difference is that this is not a new policy that we haven't discussed over and over. It's just a matter of making sure it was right so that there would be competitive opportunities for whatever entity could choose. Other questions for this panel? And we may have you come up later. But thank you for now. Mr. Yates, you have a couple of folks, along with yourself, to come forward. We'll hear from the Oregon Bankers Association.
Good morning, Chair Mesker, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Christensen. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Oregon Bankers Association. With me today are Lark Weisham, the immediate past chair of the Oregon Bankers Association and chief financial officer of Citizens Bank in Corvallis. It's one of our community banks in Corvallis. And to her right is Ken Yates, who is the vice president of government affairs and government affairs officer for Umpqua Bank. This is a bank that's was founded in Oregon in 1953 down in Canyonville. So Linda Navarro, unfortunately, could not be here this morning. She was unable to get out of a couple of speaking engagements. This was kind of posted yesterday afternoon. However, I believe circulating before you is her testimony with respect to this matter, and I would encourage you to review that, and any further questions she may be able to answer, we appreciate any calls. The Oregon Bankers Association and Independent Community Banks of Oregon object and oppose House Bill 3700. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time for me talking. I think it's best to come from our banking folks. But there are probably two issues that I would like to hit upon with respect to the bill. The first is, of course, the timing of the bill and its relative complexity and the controversy involved. Candidly, we are perplexed as to why this bill is being heard right now in this short session. The public funds issue, while not new to the Oregon legislature, is a very complex issue, not one that can be adequately dealt with in a short one-month session. As the testimony of my panel and fellow panelists are going to reflect, and as what's stated in Linda's Navarro's testimony, hundreds of volunteer hours by many Oregon bankers and partners in local government and the Treasury, as well as the tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees paid by our industry and associations to get where we are today with a program that is specifically designed to protect public depositors at their request, but in a way that is customized for the commercial banking industry. That is where we're at right now. To think that this program could translate in cookie-cutter fashion to credit unions without more than a few weeks, and right now our organization, this is the anniversary, the two-week anniversary of us actually having the bill in the public domain. this is a mistake in moving forward. It's moving forward entirely too quickly. And this is the path that leads to the creation of bad public policy. This is a controversial issue. As you're aware, this is not a consensus bill. This is not a bill in which we have been able to collaborate on to move the bill forward. Further, as we understand it, and as was confirmed earlier on, the Treasurer's office is neutral with respect to this bill. He's neutral. Our understanding is the basis of this session essentially was non-controversial emergency issues and budgetary issues. This doesn't satisfy either of those criteria. If this is an issue that needs to come up in 2011, so be it. But right now is not the time to move forward with this bill. As an aside, I understand and have been advised that there is currently an amendment that has been working its way through LC and has been requested that would increase the cap that exists from $250,000 to $500,000. As of right now, I do not have that amendment in my possession. It has been moving its way through Legislative Council. The second issue that I'll hit on very briefly is with respect to the fiscal and revenue statements that we reviewed prior to the bill leaving the floor. There is a fiscal statement that was given with respect to the bill. Given our tough budgetary times, I don't think right now is the time for a non-emergency measure to warrant those additional funds. Second of all, with respect to the revenue statement, I believe my counterparts will expand on this as well. At least the version that came out of the House floor, this would have no revenue impact on the state. And we don't understand how that conclusion can be reached with the fact that funds would be leaving our community banks, which are taxpaying entities, pay their corporate tax, and moving from those into our credit unions, which are tax exempt. The bottom line is there would be a revenue impact with respect to this if those funds are in fact moved or end up in tax-exempt credit unions. So I would ask that you consider both of those issues. The bottom line, and I'll conclude my remarks simply by saying there are important issues that we are addressing this session. This one, however, just doesn't make sense for Oregon at this time, especially during the challenging times of our economy. The consequences of this legislation would be very damaging to Oregon's community banks in particular, and we believe that the testimony of our banking representatives who are here with me today are going to paint a clear picture of that fact. And with that, I would turn it over to our other panelists. Thanks.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Business and Transportation Committee, my name is Ken Yates. I am Vice President and Government Affairs Officer for Umpqua Bank, Oregon's state-chartered and largest community bank, founded in 1953 in Canyonville, Oregon. The sleepy bank of about $150 million back in 1953. The last 15 years has grown to a $10 billion bank with 162 locations in Oregon, Northern California, and also now in Washington State. I'd like to address this legislation on several levels. As one of the few publicly traded companies still headquartered in the state of Oregon, as a state chartered bank, as Oregon's bank, as its largest community bank. It is a fact that credit unions do not pay corporate income taxes in the state of Oregon. They may pay the other taxes, but we do too. I think that's very important to understand. It is also important to understand that this legislation will not increase liquidity or lending capacity in the state of Oregon. It simply tilts the playing field unevenly in the direction of credit unions against Oregon community banks because of that state corporate income tax issue. And that is a competitive advantage. And I would not like to see this institution tilt the playing field further because we're seeing increasingly large credit unions competing directly with community banks in Oregon on the commercial lending side and not just the consumer side. And so this is a direct competitive issue. If you shift public funds from community banks to credit unions, again, it will not increase liquidity, total liquidity and lending in this state. It will give them a competitive advantage. We will lose deposits. We have about a half a dozen distressed community banks in the state right now on the bubble, and this will further distress those struggling institutions. We know this because we've acquired two in the last year in Washington State. At no time, and this is independent analysis, at no time since World War II have community banks in the United States of America been under such distress. This is not the time for this legislation. I'm disturbed by the fact that there was no consultation, discussion, work group of any sort during the interim. And the Oregon Bankers Association has worked on this issue with the Treasurer, with DCBS, and with the legislature since 1998. And yet we were not a party to the discussion. That raises a question of motivation. And my boss, Ray Davis, said it in the House, and I will say it here in the Senate. This legislation started in the House in political retribution for positions the industry took in the late tax election of last month. I am gratified and appreciative that that kind of reactionary proposal did not originate in the Senate. You are the deliberative body under our Constitution, and I would simply ask that you recognize the politics from which this legislation originated and judge it on that basis as well as on the merits. And I do not believe that 2 weeks is significant time to evaluate a major policy change that will have tremendous financial impacts on community banks in this state and on the economy of this state and on the revenues potentially of this state, because it only stands to reason if you are removing public funds from tax-paying entities and shifting them to non-state tax-paying entities, there will be a revenue loss. We calculate that for every $100 million in lost public funds in our bank, that loss to the state is $316,000. And again, that's just one bank. It has been said that this will not hurt community banks, that the vast majority of public funds deposits are in large federally chartered institutions. That is simply not true. Oregon's bank, Umpqua Bank, holds 39% of public funds currently in the state of Oregon. 39%. You have also heard the 24/7 news beast over and over again, another fallacy, that banks are not lending. That is not true. Those that are distressed, and I mentioned there are about a half a dozen of them, certainly are not as much as they would like to, because of the regulatory scrutiny that they are under and restrictions that they are under. Umpqua Bank and all the other banks in the state that are chartered here are lending. We did $1.7 billion in lending last year at the height of the Great Recession. $1 billion of that in Oregon, primarily small businesses, which we all know are the engine of recovery and the creator of the most jobs in our economy. With that, Mr. Chairman, let me just make a few other points and I will conclude. If public funds are withdrawn from community banks, and they are under great stress right now, and this would happen because of the credit union's state income tax advantage, an advantage that's just grown in the last election, it would be possible that a bank would find itself in a situation where it needed to sell securities to meet their liquidity needs under FDIC. If those securities were sold at a loss, and they could very well be, that would put all deposits in the institution at risk. In other words, the withdrawal of public deposits could put deposits in stressed community banks in peril, risking further community bank failures in this state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. And I appreciate your attention and consideration of this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yates. And I'm going to go on to the next testimony, but I want to stop you on one point, because I do have some questions afterwards along with my committee members, is I just can't let pass your comment about that this bill is here for political reasons. Now, maybe I'm naive after 12 years in the legislature, because no one has told me anything about that. And I hear that all the time. I just came out of a committee meeting in Rules, in which Mr. Martinez testified opposing a bill the banks opposed, and that bill did not move. So I guess if it was political reasons, that thing should have moved, but, you know, we didn't move that bill. So I just can't let you get away with just saying that in generic form. But I'm happy to have you tell me who is the person, individual involved that you're talking about, because I'd like to talk to that person about that.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that comes from reliable and confidential sources. I don't think anyone could do business in this building without those. I know the media couldn't. But I am not someone, and you, all of you know me, and many of you for several years, many years, because I've been in and out of this building since 1983, including as a staff person. You know that I am not a purveyor in rumor, and I would not make such a statement unless I absolutely was convinced of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to know, because I would like to be able to talk to that person and find out that, because, you know, especially in this special session, you know, we're hearing a lot about this. Like seems like every bill we get is some, you know, our first gentleman, you know, commented about controversial issues. I can't believe it's like every issue we're getting right now is controversial for some reason or another. But I don't intend to be naive about, you know, politics. But I would like to know, that the bill originated for that, since we've been working on this for a long time. That's the first I have actually heard that was a motivation. And I would agree with you. I certainly wouldn't see that as proper, but that's why I'd like to be able to have a conversation with somebody about that. Maybe we can offline.
Thank you, Mr. later. Chairman. And again, I would just conclude by saying, under the state's constitution, this is the deliberative body. The House responds to the passions of the day, and there is a lot of populist and political anger at banks, and community banks have been tarred with that same brush in a grotesquely unfair manner.
Well, I
think that vote may reflect some of that as well. But I would ask you to consider what I've said about the political motivation, because I would not bring that to you unless I was convinced.
Well, and also
on the merits.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Yates. And we'll get into some of the technical things. I don't want to get into technical things now, so I apologize, but I'm just taking my prerogative to make that point right now.
No, I appreciate it.
Because
thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think one thing is, with this committee, and you've had a lot of experience with this committee and all kinds of different issues, and I do not sense ever from any of my committee members any disappointment or negative attitude towards banks, towards credit unions, towards mortgage, any of the members of this committee. I think we've all been very, very big supporters of the financial industry in general, and have always been very deliberative. So, I mean, I know you're talking about something on that side of the building, but I just want to make it very clear.
Yes, sir.
Because we have worked very, very hard on a lot of issues, and I don't want anything to suggest that any of my members, you know, have a leaning on a political basis for that.
And Mr. Chairman, let me just say that, and repeat my comment, that I appreciate the fact that this bill did not originate in the Senate, and I recognize exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to the next question, and then we'll go to questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lark Weisham. I'm Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Citizens Bank in Corvallis, Oregon. We are a 52-year-old true community bank. We have $400 million in assets. We have $318 million in local deposits and $307 million in loans. The majority of the loans that we make at our bank are to small and medium-sized businesses. That is truly the business of community banks now in Oregon. We have branches in 13 communities in the Willamette Valley, and I've personally been a community banker in the state of Oregon for 31 years. I am a resident of Benton County. I'm pleased to be here today to share what I hope you believe is an important perspective of this bill, and that of a relatively small but very healthy and significant community bank headquartered in Oregon. We are not one of the community banks under distress. We are a very healthy bank. We are profitable, and we continue to be that way. Partially, it's a conservative nature of our underwriting of loans. We continue to write loans, and I can tell you that we are now at 100% loan-deposit ratio. For every single loan in our bank, every single deposit in our bank, we have a loan out against that dollar. I think you heard that if banks lose liquidity, we can run to the Federal Home Loan Bank and borrow money. Our bank does not believe growing on debt. We don't believe going to that it's right to go to the Federal Home Loan Bank and borrow money. We think too many banks got in trouble by getting too in debt, and then when the economy went into recession, it got them in trouble. So it's not easy just to run to the Federal Home Loan Bank if we lose public deposits and make that up. Because right now, for every dollar I have in deposit, it's out there in a loan. We have almost $6 million in public funds. If that money moves out of our bank, I have to find a way to make up $6 million. Yes, I can go borrow it. It's not what we want to do. That's not building relationships in our community. It's not making loans in my community. We can sell securities. Those securities, I can tell you, are underwater. That's going to have an impact on our bank. And if we can't loan, we're not making income, and that is not paying tax dollars into the state, because we are a bank that pay every single dollar that we can in state taxes. We don't take any tax advantages. We pay straight income tax off of our earnings. So if I lose public funds, I cannot make loans. I cannot pay my fair share of taxes. And despite what you may be hearing, Oregon banks are lending. We're lending, and our bank makes every good loan that we can, every possible good loan. But we only underwrite good loans. And I take exception that banks are not making loans in the state. And you can look at the Division of Corporate Securities and confirm that Oregon banks are lending. If there is a loan that can be appropriately underwritten by an Oregon bank, there are banks that are willing to make it. Additionally, Oregon banks are actively working with their business customers in these difficult times to help them succeed. Our lenders are seasoned business lenders. We have been in the business of business lending for over 52 years. When the recession hit and we started to see our commercial retail customers and our ag lenders get in trouble, because we are so seasoned in that business, we said to every single one of our loan officers, go out and meet with every business that we do business with. Let's help them not get into trouble. Too many times the business waits until it's crisis, and then they come to the bank and need help. We tried to be proactive. We went to those businesses and said, let's work with each other. We want to make you successful, and we're good at that. And if we lose money out of our bank, that's fewer businesses that we can coach. And we truly believe in being a partner with our businesses and our community and making them successful. We're part of the communities we serve. We don't just make loans to businesses and farms. We partner with them to succeed in our community. We are active business partners to our small and farms. Public deposits are extremely important to our bank, and I can assure you that the Public Deposit Protection Program is very complex. I was on that committee that drafted the current public funds bill. I personally put in over 100 hours on that bill, and I've been involved in public funds for over 10 years. It is a complex issue, and I think it's short-sighted to have a bill like this come up in a short session. There is not enough time to vet the issues of the impact to community banks, vet the issues on the impact to the state in the form of income tax dollars, because truly it is going to have an impact. To get this bill passed when I worked on it was a huge collaborative effort, and as I mentioned, hours of time. And just to mirror it by the credit unions, I think, is a mistake. There is just not time to understand all the ramifications in this short session. Large banks offer sophisticated government banking services for the largest public funds in Oregon. These depositories will continue to do businesses with these large banks. They offer sophisticated programs to these public entities. The impact of this legislation will be on banks like Citizens Bank, a true community bank in Oregon, who keeps its deposits local, it keeps its loans local, and we work with our business partners to make them succeed. So moving money out of a bank like Citizens Bank, what does that do for the state of Oregon? What impact is that going to have on revenues? Last year, Citizens Bank, in addition to property taxes, in addition to personal property taxes, we paid over $430,000 in state income taxes. That bill will go down if we lose public funds and we cannot make loans at the level we're making. Deposits are difficult in this economy. We have long relationships with our public entities in our community. We're in small communities. That's our niche. And we've developed a relationship with those public entities over years.
I got to wrap this up right now.
Yes.
We're starting to kind of be redundant. What I'd like to do is we're going to have questions of all of you. We are on the floor in 5 minutes, and as the pro tem, I have been asked by the president to run because he is obligated with some governor from Southern California or something. So what I want to do is I have one other person that wants to testify, Hasina Squires. And what I want to do is we have to recess in about 4 minutes here. But we'll be back. So my apologies. But I wanted to make sure we got the testimony of Ms. Squires on, and then we'll come back. We're going to reconvene. What time can we do this?
We should check with the members to find out their availability this afternoon.
Can we recess to a time uncertain then, or
may I ask the members what would 1 o'clock seem like for those
conflicts? I have another committee. I can ask to be excused.
1 o'clock.
I've got a committee at 1 o'clock. I can ask to be excused. Also, 3 o'clock is open for me.
3 o'clock. Is 3 o'clock open?
Bruce is gone. And
why don't we set for 1 o'clock and then?
I have a very quick bill up that I can get here. I'll see that as a UG
issue. Okay. So Ms. Squires, you want to come forward? Let's hear from Hasina for a couple of minutes. And Ms. Squires, if it takes longer, we will come back. But I just want to kind of try to at least get this on before we recess.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, thank you for your
thank you. And check with Mr. Sandberg, but it looks like 1 o'clock.
We will post outside.
Yeah. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, a nonprofit that represents over 900 special service districts who provide services throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here today to support House Bill 3700. I testified in the House. Our association is not in any political connection with the banks or the credit unions or any other unknown entity that may be pushing this bill. We have always supported increasing the threshold limit for credit unions, for local governments to invest in credit or deposit in credit unions. I actually was here in 2005, and I did testify on the bill that increased that threshold to $250,000. So this is not a deviation from anything else that I have said in the past. Of our special districts, 61% of them have annual budgets that exceed $250,000. I'd like to make it clear, though, we do have a number of large districts that are depositing large sums of dollars in banks. We like our banks. We want to continue to be able to use banks as public depositories, but we really appreciate the option and the ability for local governments, particularly in rural areas, to connect at the local level with their local credit union and place their public funds locally. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Squires. And we may have some questions. We're going to have to do it at 1 o'clock or shortly thereafter. So with that, we are in recess until 1 o'clock for the floor. Thank you, Paul.
I'm not sure if this will be the room that we will be in, but we will post outside this room to tell you what the room number is.